Nation, A1 Custom Car Care.
All right, good morning and welcome. You've got Sarah and Dustin, A1 Custom Car Care. Miss Sarah, how's the world treating you?
It was good. How was your birthday?
You know, it was all right. It wasn't too bad. A little warm, a little toasty, but it was very, very nice.
So what are you, like 29?
39.
Oh, my
goodness.
Yeah,
not quite the big 4-0. That'll be next year. But turned 39.
Do you feel it?
Oh, yeah. I feel like 70.
I also feel like I'm 70.
Yeah, definitely the old man noises, like as I get up off the floor.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
All that, you know, business. It's like, oh, yeah, it's catching up with you. But no, it's good. I actually honestly feel pretty good for being almost 40. So.
That's good. Well, you got some stuff done.
I did.
You've been buying all kinds of vehicles.
Yeah, all the fixer-uppers.
Yep, resurrecting them.
Yep, I can't let the old Ford 543 valves go. And so when, you know, people honestly at this point, you know, I'll get a phone call every once in a while. Hey, I got this F-150. Are you interested? Well, yeah, probably. I can't help it. That is going to be my son's first truck, by the way. Honestly, I should remember what year it is. I have a few, but I went out to, I think it was Claremore, Oklahoma.
Oh, I've heard of Claremore.
And found a deal on auction. And so he's going to have a bright red. It's a bright red Ford F-150 FX4. Now, it does need some love. It's
does it have
life.
AC?
It will. I mean, it's on there. Whether it's functional, I don't know. So far, what I know is it needs a set of tires. The front pump in the transmission is leaking and making some bad noises. And probably going to have to do timing chains on it. So it's going to need some sprucing up. But for a first vehicle, I think this will be good. Other than it probably won't get great fuel economy. That's probably the only downside for it being a first vehicle is that, oh dear, old dad will probably be paying for fuel for a while, which is fine. But if, God forbid, he gets in an accident, at least he's got some structure there.
So whenever you purchase your vehicles, because I know you're always running around, going to Texas, going to Oklahoma, Kansas, how long does it take you to resurrect something that has been sitting in a field for a while?
Well, so that's a little bit of a loaded question. A lot of times I have projects in front of it, so then I get it and I have to like let it sit. This one's been sitting for several months. But like once it hits the shop, and of course I have a day job, A1 Custom takes a lot of my time and focus, and so I don't want to take away from that. But for the kids, when I rehab one, kind of part-time, usually anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks, because anytime I get a vehicle that's pre-owned pretty much, there's always stuff that had been, you know, not taken care of, not addressed, or let go for, you know, extended period of time. Oh, I'm selling it, so I'm not going to worry about this or that. So typically, whatever the primary concern of the reason they were parked, because most of anything that I pick up is disabled or unoperational. And so I have to rehab them. And on that, I've got to fix the existing issues, and then I've got to start driving it. So if you guys don't care, I'll tell you a couple of resurrection stories real quick. That, you know, one of them I picked up, it was an F-150, I think it was an 07 model, had 220,000 miles on it. So, beautiful truck, Lariat, had kind of that pearl white to it, leather interior, I mean, nice truck. I want to say that I got that one for maybe $1,500 or $2,000, but it had an engine problem. So, I pulled the cab off of it, I pulled the cylinder heads on it, I had a valve train issue, got the heads redone, new factory Ford cams, factory followers and lifters, a lockout kit for the variable valve timing that's a prolonged problem with those engines, and so I want to fix all that while I have it all apart so I don't have to go back in there probably ever. And so that truck, probably I spent a solid month on it. But here's where the driving part of it comes in. Once I start driving it, then you know, feel any kind of brake pulsation. So I rebuilt the brake system on it. And then at 800 miles after doing all that work, out of nowhere, the transmission let go in it. And I think I only had second gear, if I remember right. So anytime you're purchasing a vehicle from somebody else, you need to address whatever obviously the primary concerns are, the, you know, foregone maintenance that hasn't been done. That's something that I'm pretty picky about, you know, servicing the transfer case while I had it out, putting the transmission in it, servicing the rear differential, any kind of the brake system, obviously, I'm going to address. When you have a vehicle that sits a lot, the brakes typically suffer pretty drastically, honestly. I have it to where the calipers lock up, the brake hoses start to deteriorate, and they start to not apply pressure and relieve the pressure as you cycle your foot on the master cylinder. So a lot of that stuff is things that you all are going to find when you're buying a pre-owned car, especially the longer that it's sat. Honestly, I've bought one of the other trucks that I went down to Texas and got, honestly, my favorite truck that I've owned and sold. It was a 06 F-250, and it was a gas engine, so it was a little lackluster on power, but it was a four-door, four-wheel drive, eight-foot long bed. So this thing was like a battleship trying to park it anywhere, but I really loved how that truck went down the road. And that truck, I think on the odometer, had like 400,000 miles on it. Apparently, everything in Texas is very far from everything else in Texas. The gentleman that I bought it from owned an excavating contracting company, and so he drove all over the place estimating these excavating jobs, and so he was on the road all the time. The reason I bring that up is because a lot of people will shy away from high-mileage vehicles, and once you start kind of paying attention to a vehicle that's driven like that, I didn't have to do any brakes on that. I didn't have to really rehab a lot, even though the vehicle had sat when the engine let go in it for a while, because it had been on the road so much. So not always is high mileage a huge concern for me, as well as with that being high mileage, and has somebody took enough care of it to get it to 400 and whatever thousand miles. They replaced a lot of parts. So that truck had a full new front end under it. It had had brake work, obviously, over the years done to it. Had new interior, new blower motor resistor, window motors. I mean, he had really taken good care of that. So buying it at 400 plus thousand miles wasn't a concern for me. I ended up getting a crate engine and putting that truck. It was a wonderful little truck. The only reason that I got rid of it at all is I had a gentleman that had a 7.3-liter diesel-powered Excursion, and I've always wanted an Excursion. Anybody out there that's owned one or, you know, likes doing recreational stuff away from the city a little bit, to get a diesel-powered Excursion that'll pull, like, I mean, big-time weight, handle it well, and have three rows of seats and ride very comfortably. That Excursion has been a great vehicle. We've had it several years, but that's the only reason I got rid of the other truck, is because we had an opportunity to move into Excursion, and I've always wanted one. But if I ever get a chance to buy that same body style, like, I forget what year Ford changed that body style, probably from 04-ish, 03-ish, on up to probably 2008, maybe even 09 at some point. I think they changed to that 6.4-liter body style, which was a complete garbage motor. Sorry if anybody's got a 6.4 out there. They just really were not engineered to live long-term versus what you get out of a 7.3 that you can get. I think my Excursion at this point now has got almost 450,000 miles on it, and we still drive it to St. Louis on a pretty regular basis. It has been a wonderful rig, as well as I've seen a lot of other 7.3s out there really holding their value very, very well, and still a very sought-after truck or SUV in my case. When we went up towards Chillicothe, Missouri, up northern Missouri, I took it up there for deer season this last year, pulled a trailer up there, did my deer hunting up there, came back with a couple of deer, and that Excursion did awesome. Just set the cruise with the trailer. You really don't even know it's back there, and you're home before you know it. So definitely something to keep in mind when you're getting a vehicle from somebody else, whether it's got 100,000 on it or 400,000 on it, is you're going to have to work some of the bugs out, and it's easy to get discouraged. Or if you take it to a shop and, you know, as the shop starts to drive it, they're like, hey, we've got some other concerns. You've got to work through that process. That's what buying a used or pre-owned vehicle is. is working all the neglections out of the vehicle once you end up with it. But we're at our first break. Sarah and I will be right back after this.
Your complete car care solution. A1 Custom Car Care.
All right, welcome back, Sarah Dustin, A1 Custom Car Care. Sarah, you got some sticky notes over there.
I do.
Anything related to the shenanigans we talked about last week?
Yes, so we talked about a couple different things last week. One of the things we talked about is you are getting a CB in your truck.
Yep.
Did you get that done yet?
So I haven't. I've had one in my work truck for quite a while. I have got a new-to-me one-ton, I think we talked about. It is in there, but I don't have the mounting worked out the way I want. I'm waiting on some brackets and stuff. So we're getting there.
We were talking about the CB handles. Okay. So I recommended Rusty Dusty.
You did. And I ran that by Jonas, by the way, and he thought that was a wonderful CB now.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, you had a couple here though. One said Mr. Wrench.
Oh, that's a good
one. What about Mr. Goodwrench?
There you go.
So
there's that one.
I know. So there's a couple of CB handles for you. And also we talked about the Jeep thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We did.
You know how Jeep owners, they always wait. They have a special wave.
It's a culture.
Yes.
It really is.
And we also talked about the Jeep duck thing. And we didn't really know the backstory of it. We did have a listener text in.
Thank you for that, by the way, because I am dying to know this duck thing.
So they didn't give us too much of the backstory, but they said, hey, guys, love the show. The Jeep duck thing is that Jeep drivers place a duck on another Jeep that they admire with a note. And it's usually a note of encouragement. And then the owner of that Jeep places the gifted duck on their dashboard.
You know, now that you've said that, there is a couple running around Springfield, and they definitely participate in this because the one I can think of, it had probably, and I don't want to exaggerate, maybe 10 or 15 different ducks on the little dash that you could see as you met them in traffic. So the culture, the car culture, I guess, is it differs, and there's something for everybody.
Yeah.
If you are a Jeep person, have you ever had or been around a Jeep? Any friends have Jeeps? Anything? Have you spent very much time cruising in a Jeep ever?
So I have a couple of friends that own Jeeps, and a few people actually here at the station own Jeeps.
Ah.
And one of them, they have the little ducks just lined up on their Jeep. And I think the other one, I think it's a specific type of Jeep that you have to have. I think it's a Jeep Wrangler.
Okay.
That gets the ducks. I don't know, because I'm trying to think now off the top of my head what Katie drives. She drives a Jeep, but I don't know.
It's the smaller SUV for some reason.
And I don't think she has any ducks.
I don't think so. Maybe we'll have to see if we could get some little rubber duckies.
I know.
She's feeling left out.
Maybe. I don't know how that works. I'm still going to have to research this.
So I'm pretty sure I was 16, maybe 15, but I had a CJ7, which is the older Jeeps, pre-Wrangler. This was still AMC. I think it was 79. Had the side pipes, and it had loud exhaust on it, and it was rough. But it ran well. Did a bunch of work to that. And so I drove that pretty much through high school, if I can remember right. And one of my favorite things about that Jeep was in the summertime when it was nice outside, having the top completely off of it and driving in the country where you can see the stars. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget that. It was such a... I mean, I know our motorcycle family out there, they experience that probably all the time. But from normally being in a car with a cab, a roof, chassis, windows, the whole deal, it's a whole different experience owning and driving in a Jeep, let alone if you take it down to the river or the lake or whatever the case may be. It is just awesome. Now, something you don't think about is there's a lot of sun, and so some kind of shade makes a big difference. But I absolutely, out of all the, and I've owned a pretty good amount of vehicles throughout the years, I've never really had a high horsepower car. That's kind of in my bucket list, if you will. And I'm sure I'll build one at some point in time. But I've had a lot of trucks, a lot of four-wheel drive SUVs. I mean, I've owned a few cars, but I've never really been a car guy. I had a really slick black Monte Carlo at one time. I did really like that car. That was an awesome car. But the Jeep being able to pull the top off of it and even mudding in it while you didn't have the top on it and you got to wear all the mud, just absolute blast. That thing was awesome. I pulled a lot of people out with that Jeep, come to think of it, in just like random places. And during any kind of snow or precipitation that was, you know, wintry, just absolute blast. The heater was awful in that thing. You froze to death in there. My top was really ratty. I needed to get a new top for it. But that Jeep had a 360 AMC V8 with a 3 or 4 speed manual transmission. That thing was just awesome. Absolutely awesome. I love that thing. I've had some CJ5s over the years. I have a Wrangler now that needs some love that I've not really rehabbed or anything like that. Definitely, if you've not experienced owning a Jeep, it's a whole different experience versus driving something. You do have to worry about people getting in it and messing with it because everything's vinyl and it's easy to get into, as well as you will learn very quickly that those pop-up thunder showers that weren't forecasted correctly, I've been drenched. I'm sure every Jeep owner out there has. And that was something that I thought about those new Broncos that was really awesome. Most Jeeps, there's no place to put the doors when you take them off, and so you leave them at home, right?
Yeah.
The new Bronco did an awesome job, and they have a little rack or tray system that you take them off, and they fit inside the Bronco.
Oh, that's neat.
Which, that's $1 million or billion-dollar idea, I guess. So if you are out and about, and it does get cold or start to rain, all your doors are there, and you can just put them back on.
That's really smart.
It is. That was well done, Ford. There's times where I really want to give you a piece of my mind for things you do, but this is not one of them. Those Broncos are pretty slick little vehicles, and I'm seeing those kind of modded out a little bit more in the Jeep culture.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot too, but I've also seen where the Broncos, they've had quite a few problems just right out of the gate. I believe there was transmission
and engine problems.
Yes.
Like the engine would lock up at a very low mileage.
Yeah. I've seen quite a few of those recall alerts come from them, and just like cosmetic things as well. So if you are a Bronco owner out there and you haven't received any of those recall alerts yet, highly recommend taking a look into it. And it is for the newer models as well.
Yep.
So I've been reading about this this duck Jeep thing.
Yeah.
That's what they call it. It started out of Canada, actually. And it started with a woman who had a verbal encounter with someone a couple days before she started this duck Jeep thing.
Wow,
and
okay.
So anyways, she had this terrible encounter with somebody, and she was just feeling just really crummy. Mm. She was not having a good day, and she ended up seeing another Jeep that she really, really liked, and she was in a store, and she ended up purchasing a little yellow duck, and she decided that she was going to go ahead and just put it on this person's vehicle, and she wrote a little note like, hey, I've had a bad couple days, and I just wanted to let you know I really liked your Jeep.
Aw, that's
and
awesome.
It just really morphed into this crazy Jeep thing.
See, those are the best things like that, where you pay it forward a little bit.
Yeah.
You know? Pay somebody a compliment, give them a little knickknack, whatever it is, and then it takes its own like energy and just takes off.
Right, yeah. So I was looking it up mainly because we have a friend, mutual friend, that has a Jeep, but I wasn't exactly sure. Is this just for Jeep Wranglers? Because they're the ones that you see all of the ducks on. So apparently, according to MotorTrend.com, so if you're out there and be like, no, it's just for Wranglers, I'm getting this off Motor Trend, guys.
You can write them a letter.
Yeah, that's right. They say you can do it for any Jeep model, either old or new or rusty or shiny. It doesn't matter. The Duck Jeep is a game for any and all models of Jeep. Even a child's Jeep wagon can be ducked. And I know that to be true because my little one has one of those little Jeeps that you can drive around. You know, it's really cute. And one of my coworkers got a little duck for it.
Oh,
I know.
Awesome.
I'm going to have to super glue it on the hood or something.
Definitely.
Yeah. So it's a little history on that.
That's fantastic. This is not a plug by any means, but have you ever heard of Oakley Auto World down there in Branson West?
Mm-mm.
If you don't mind, Google T-Rock Jeep. And I would assume that it'll pull up Oakley Auto World. There's a few running around Springfield. But they have done, and I think it's based off of Table Rock, and that's their modifications that they do to their Jeeps. But they do an amazing job making over Jeeps, and I think they're doing it probably to the Broncos as well. I've you know, grew up around here. So I remember when Oakley was a much smaller car lot down there. And now it's a beautiful facility. And they build these T-Roc Jeeps. Kind of back in the day, they would have the Yanko Camaros and Novas, you know, Saline. You know, they make their own custom mods and then sell a certain numbered amount of production of them. And, you know, I really enjoy that. The older I get, and it's not that I'm not impressed with a really slick original, you know, 69 Camaro or whatever. Those are beautiful as well. But when you get the right, and I'm not an aftermarket modification guy. I really do not like most aftermarket parts. But there are certain ones that really start to set things off. Like, I am a huge, like, ranch hand style front bumper guard for trucks. I am just a huge believer. I picked up a deer here about last year with one of the trucks I have a ranch hand bumper on. And thank goodness I was driving that truck, because had it been one of my other trucks that don't have one, I would have lost the majority of the front end of that truck. But there's certain aftermarket upgrades, modifications, leveling kits for trucks. I'm not a big lift kit guy, but I definitely like leveling kits on a lot of these trucks. It gets the front end up anywhere from an inch and a half to 2 inches, as well as, you know, you need to do alignment to get everything back in spec. But that's something we do quite often, where we'll level one of these trucks out and set the alignment accordingly so the truck still drives well, but you get a little bit more ground clearance out of it. You know, along with that, I'm not the crazy, like, zombie hunter LED lights everywhere kind of guy, but I do like good lighting on trucks. I typically do an LED conversion on most of my trucks, as well as sometimes I will add some additional work lighting, because there is a many times where I'm stopping to help or I'm doing something after dark, especially through the winter, and lighting is key. I, at one point in time, was a mobile service tech. So, you know, that's just part of who I am. Maybe that's not for everybody, but I want function versus fashion, definitely, because we, you know, I gotta have things that work. But Sarah and I are down at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to 104.1 Springfield's Talk. We'll be right back after this.
Your complete car care solution. A1 Custom Car Care.
All right, welcome back, Sarah and Dustin. A1 Custom Car Care. Sarah, it's officially summer.
Oh, it is hot.
It is so hot.
I'm ready for fall.
I, you know, was trying to do my yard work and stuff, as we all are, and holy smokes.
Yeah.
Even early in the morning, it is still melty out mm-hmm. there. And late in the evening, as it cools down, quote unquote, it's still chewy big time. So my question is, have you seen any cars broken down on the side of the road in your commuting?
I have seen quite a few.
It seemed like it's more. Maybe I'm just hypersensitive to it, but it seems like I'm seeing more cars stalled on the side of the road.
Now that I think about it, the husband and I, we were driving, I don't know where we were going, but we were actually talking about vehicles on the side of the road that had been there for like a yeah. week or so. Mm-hmm. And there's probably five or six in our little stretch from mm-hmm. our house to Springfield that we've seen. And some of them are nicer mm-hmm. vehicles. And I don't know about you, but I think it's kind of terrifying sometimes leaving your vehicle yeah. on the side of the road. Obviously, there's some kind of stress because something is going wrong.
Yeah.
But then leaving your vehicle for an extended period of time mm-hmm. for days on end, whether you were traveling and you just had to keep going or you just didn't have the funds to go and get a tow truck. I don't know what oftentimes leads for a vehicle to set multiple days, but people are crummy.
Yeah.
And they are. I always think about that whenever I see a vehicle on the side of the road, because catalytic converter thefts yep. are up. That's my first thought. I think about people just, you know, being jerks and mm-hmm. vandalizing, yeah. stealing, things
for
like that.
No good reason.
I know. It's they're like that person's already, yeah. you know, down and out mm-hmm. because their vehicle's on the side of the road. Don't make it worse.
So we work quite a bit. We've got a couple of sister shops down in Northwest Arkansas. And so I'm down there weekly, typically, and I can remember a Nissan Murano that's exactly what you're talking about. Like, I saw it broke down. you know, and I come back a week later and it's still in the same spot. Nobody had got it off the side of the interstate down there. But when I came back a week later, I could see the exhaust hanging down with a missing catalytic converter on it. So not only did they have a failed car, but now they have additional vandalism. I remember one time when I was a kid, we had an old van that we were driving to St. Louis, and somewhere just past Rolla, the transmission let go in it. Mm. And so we got off the side of the road. That was my first transmission job I ever did, was in this van, by the way. I had no idea what I was doing. If you've never done a transmission, not to side note here with story time, but when I was changing the transmission, I did it in the driveway, in the grass and rock, and had it jacked up on jack stands. And I didn't know what I was doing. I was just taking bolts out. I was probably 13, maybe. And so I'm laying under it, and there has a transmission pan where all the fluid's held. It's pretty obvious, but I'm going to tell on myself how dumb and ignorant I was when I was like 13. My dad was at work. I think my mom, I'm sure, was as well. So I was like, yeah, I can do this. You know, why not? Well, I'm taking bolts out. Well, I was just taking bolts out to take bolts out. This transmission had no understanding of what I was doing. And so I take the last bolt out of the transmission pan, which does not need to come off to do a transmission, by the way. And I'm laying under there, and I didn't know it was full of burnt, nasty transmission fluid, but all that fluid just in my mouth, my eyes, my ear. I mean, I just drenched, and it's all burnt, chunky. I mean, even transmission fluid's gross anyway, but to take a bath in it and then have to waller around in it afterwards. So it's amazing I turned out to be a mechanic, I guess, as some of those experience. I did a clutch there, my first clutch job I did in a little Nissan Pathfinder we had, but I digress. When we got back to pick up that van, somebody, they didn't vandalize it, but they siphoned all the gas out of that van. There was barely enough on there to start it and like limp it onto the trailer. I don't think we had a winch at that point in time, and we were able to get it up on there. A friend of my dad that he was working with had a good truck and a good trailer, and he spent his time running up there and towing it back for us. But part of that and seeing what he could do with a truck and trailer is why, since the time I was probably 18 to 20, I have owned a decent would be a nice way to say most of my trucks. Most of them were complete wrecks. But they ran well, and so I could tow with them. But I've had a car hauling trailer since then. And out of everything that I have that I use, that in particular piece of equipment is probably one of the most useful things that I've ever purchased, is having a decent truck and a good car hauling trailer and the know-how to use it. Because there is... some do's and don'ts about how to load, where to load, et cetera, et cetera. And then for a long time, I thought I should have a half-ton truck. And a half-ton truck's great, but if you're doing a lot of towing, once you step up to a three-quarter ton or a one-ton, whole different ballgame. Really, really enjoy that. But to your point, it is 'tis the season to be hot. There's going to be a lot more broken-down cars out on the side of the road. And I don't know how to actually articulate this, but I'm going to give it a go. I stop and help a lot of people quite often, but it's getting harder and harder to be able to do a roadside repair and get them back going, unless it's tire related or they're out of fuel. Most of the time, and I cannot stress this enough, and if you all out there in radio land listen to nothing, hear me when I say, if you overheat or the vehicle starts to overheat, I don't care how close you are to home. I don't want you stopping in the middle of the road. You need to get to a safe area, but you have to do it immediately, because these engines that are all aluminum, most of them, they will not, and I cannot stress that enough, please hear me out there in radio land, they will not tolerate an overheat. Even one time, very briefly, got a dear friend. He actually had bought it from a dealership, took it back to the dealership, say, hey, I'm smelling a little bit of coolant. Well, they did not do a good job. They did not find the coolant leak. And instead of finding the coolant leak, they sold him a coolant flush, which is absolutely ridiculous, in my opinion. You talk about malpractice, that's malpractice. So he was going back to them because he had like a couple of free oil changes, I think, when you buy a new truck or even a pre-owned truck. But they didn't find it. So it was a very mild overheat, but it blew the head gaskets on his pickup. and thankfully had an extended warranty with a good company. And he was out of pocket, you know, some expense on putting head gaskets in this truck. But the extended warranty company picked up a fair amount of it, but it was really truly because they will not. So if you're out there and you can hear the sound of Sarah and I's voice, you have to watch your temperature gauge. And if you have young drivers, it happened to us a few months ago. One of our older kids started to overheat. They were within a few miles from home, so they went ahead and pushed it. Thankfully, it didn't blow the head gaskets on it, but I have to instill this in as many people as possible. If you drive and overheat, you will need an engine. It will not tolerate it. Back in the day, the old commercials where the old guy'd open the hood on the truck and steam would be everywhere. They'd pour some coolant in there or water and then send it on about their day. They will not do that. So you can have a very, very nice vehicle that essentially has got a paperweight under the hood because you overheated it. As well as the ability to put head gaskets in these newer engines is not near what it used to be. When we talk about some multi-air stuff in these cylinder heads that Fiat's got out there and the variable valve timing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, we can continue to talk all day long, but definitely needs some serious attention after an overheat. So please don't be that guy or gal. But we need to step into a break. You're listening to 104.1 KSGF Springfield's Talk.
Your complete car care solution, A1 Custom Car Care.
All right, we got just a little bit of time. You got Sarah and Dustin, A1 Custom Car Care. Miss Sarah, have you driven by the Fort and Sunshine corner lately?
It's been a couple of weeks, but the last time I was over there, there was some concrete poured. Mm-hmm. And then the next time I was over there, there was actually some structure being erected. So it was like, whoa, there it is. There's a building happening.
Big movement. If you drive by there, you look at the roof line, we will be able to accommodate some serious, you know, cargo vans. And, you know, for all my plumbing companies out there, electricians, etc., package delivery companies, we will have the ability to service those the way they are intended and not, you know, and I'm not saying I'm too good to work down on the floor, but if you have a vehicle that's too big and you still want to service it, you know, and your lifts are not capable of lifting it, you're doing it on the ground. And I fixed a lot of cars down on the floor, but having the right equipment, the lifts, the ability to align them afterwards, etc., is huge. So we did a walkthrough this last week with the contractor, the architect, both great fellas, and some of the subs. And they actually have most of the interior walls framed at this point. And I can see how big our training room. We're going to do a roughly 30-person seminar room built in-house to where we will be able to continue and grow our skills, train new technicians, train on new technology. We've got some offices back there. We've got a break room for the technicians. I mean, this thing's going to be set up really well to make sure that we are able to continue to change and adapt for current automotive repairs and maintenance that, you know, I'm not saying that we can't or haven't done that in our other shops. We absolutely have. But being able to start at ground zero and build the building to accommodate the future of what A1 Custom Car Cares is and will need to be. You know, this is an interesting time in the automotive industry that a lot of the veteran folks that have been taking care of the community of Springfield and Republic for, you know, decades, a lot of those folks are retiring or choosing not to continue because the industry is adapting and changing so fast. You know, back in the day, you had a multimeter and a test light, and you could diagnose a lot of cars. Maybe a compression gauge, vacuum gauge, fuel pressure gauge. All those are pretty minimal pieces of equipment, and they are still very valuable. I'm not taking anything away from those. However, when you look at what is needed to do automotive repair at the level that we are doing it at this point, and the demand of folks going other places and, you know, coming up short on their expectations of getting their vehicles repaired. And typically a lot of them have been somewhere else first for whatever reason. And they ask around, and thankfully a lot of you folks out there say, hey, A1's the place to take your stuff to, which I don't take lightly. I take that very, very serious. that we live up to that expectation. When we come to market to diagnose or repair or figure out what's going on with one of these vehicles when we're having issues, it's extremely complex, and I had better be armed to the teeth to get down and dirty to find out what's going on with these cars and verify the repair. So, you know, we've talked a lot about some new equipment. We've actually added some new equipment this year as well. That the ability to program modules, you can't just hang a part on some of these cars anymore and expect it to work. You have to hang or install the part. Hang is kind of a slang term in the mechanic world. You have to install the part. You've got to have a good part. A lot of these aftermarket companies out there, what they're selling at some of these big box parts stores, and I realize I pick on them quite a bit, but it just drives me up a wall that, you know, like, oh, it's a fuel pump control module, or it's, you know, a PCM, or sometimes even a transmission. They have modules built inside of them that you have to program the correct parameters for them to work correctly. And the aftermarket parts are not doing it. They're absolutely doing a very poor job, 90% of them. There is a small 10%. And because we do this for a living every single day, we know what 10% is okay and we know what to stay away from. So I'm very, very strict on what and how it is we do our automotive repair. And then secondly, the systems, there's more systems on a car than there ever used to be. So everything's got a computer in it. Everything's got to talk on the network. And when that network's not happy, figuring out what's going on. So now we need lab scopes and folks that are capable of running them. Oh, but wait, there's more. With the new, I would say, beginning of autonomous driving, which would be the self-driving cars starting to become more mainstream, whether you like it or not, there's a lot of aids on a lot of these cars that we didn't used to have. The blind spot monitoring, adaptive cruise, adaptive braking, backup monitor, radar, sonar, camera systems. So if you've been in this industry for 40 years and all this is coming out and you've done okay for yourself, eventually you hang up your wrenches. And that's what's happening across the country, honestly. Now, I thankfully came in at the time where there wasn't a lot of folks getting into this industry, as well as I've got another at least 20, if not 30 years left to be doing this, which I still love and enjoy. We have the ability to calibrate your ADAS systems, which stands for Advanced Driver Assist System. And so if you are taking your vehicles to places and you're getting alignment work done, you're getting front end work done, you're getting tires, you're having the bumpers removed for any reason, new windshield, as far as I know of, the dealers can do their make and model, but if it's a Chevy and it's a Toyota, they won't be able to do the Toyota. A1 Custom is the only independent shop that I know of. There may be one other body shop here in Springfield that's doing it body related that can properly calibrate your advanced driver assist system. And it's to the point where there's folks out there doing alignments and whatnot on those cars, and that ADAS or advanced driver assist system is not going to work correctly. And there's going to be liability and there's going to be claims for insurance that... For instance, we had one years ago. Well, I say years ago. It's probably been a few years ago now. But it was a Prius that somebody had put an AC condenser on, and they had removed the front bumper, which is normal procedure. But that system wasn't calibrated, so when it pulled into our shop, we had to move the cars to the left and right of it, because the moment you started the car, it would turn the wheel all the way to the left, all the way to the lock by itself. And had you just backed up, it would have ran in or swung into that other car. So to get it moved out of the spot, we had to back both cars on either side of it away and then be able to back that Prius out there, because the previous shop didn't have the ability to calibrate that ADAS system. So having the right equipment goes a long, long way. And I am very thankful. And really the reason that I've stuck to A1 Custom for so many years is that they have invested in training and equipment. That is something that is a non-negotiable deal breaker for me, that if I am at a facility that doesn't invest in themselves and doesn't invest in training, I won't be at that facility anymore, because I don't want to go out of business personally or be relevant or valuable to the automotive industry because I didn't continue my education. You have got to continue growing. I hope when I'm in my 80s, you know, maybe I'm retired. Maybe I go back to college. I say back to college like I ever went to college. I did take a couple college classes, but it was definitely industry related. But maybe I, when I'm in my 80s, I want to get into electrical engineering, or I don't know. Maybe I want to get into underwater basket weaving, and they got college classes for that. Who knows? But I hope my point of that whole statement is that you continue learning even when you're old. Do you think you got it all figured out, Sarah?
Oh, no.
Not at all? No. I think you got it all figured out. You make this board work like it's just, you know, it sings. It's,
well, thank you.
It's fine music of what you're able to do with all those slides and buttons and toggles and witchadidges over there.
Well, thank you. Now, we've only got a couple of minutes left, so briefly tell me what's been going on around the shop here lately.
With the heat, lots of air conditioning work. We've had a few folks make the faux pas and put the sealer or stop leak in there, so...
Come on, guys.
I know.
Don't do it.
I know, and then we have the same, you know, discussion, and they're like, oh, if I only would have known, you know, but it doesn't make it cost any less, the fact you didn't know, unfortunately. So that... A lot of folks bring in vehicles out of retirement would be the best way that I could say it. Met with a guy here, I don't know how long the truck had been sitting, but been sitting quite a while, but we were able to work through all the problems. You know, it was a pretty extensive amount of repairs, but to his point, you know, it was probably a 20 to 25 year old truck, which that's some early to mid 2000s right there. Good old truck. But he couldn't afford to replace it for what he paid to get it back on the road. So lots of brake work, lots of suspension work, a lot of repairs to the fuel system that just kind of turned into lacquer thinner, if you will, and caused the injectors to be all gummed up. So we had to take care of all that fuel pump, fuel tank, basically just getting it back roadworthy again. We don't really wash cars, but for him, we did take it out and give it a good scrubbing. Because he, you know, wanted to resurrect an old truck. And that's really kind of where my mind's at this point. I want to save as many of them as I possibly can, not because I need work. I mean, we do very well, and I'm super thankful for that, by the way. But I really love bringing something back that hasn't run in a long time. Now, I can't do that, and that's really a discussion of what the expectations. You're not going to do that on a shoestring budget. But with the cost of things, it makes a lot of sense to resurrect some of those older rigs, and instead of being married to a $1,000 a month payment and potentially having issues with that. So that's really what's been going on. Quite a few engines, transmission work, just, you know, a lot of folks wanting to invest in the vehicles they got, probably because of the interest rate. I could definitely see that being a reason not to trade into a new vehicle. If you've owned it and paid taxes on it already, you're probably money ahead. You know, I had a gentleman, we did an extensive amount of work, but over half of it, had he bought a new truck and paid sales tax on it, half of that money would have went to paying taxes on a new truck. So
yeah.
I can't blame him at all for trying to keep what he's got on the road, especially if you've lettered it or wrapped it or whatever. You know, some of those are very, very expensive, or equipped it with boxes and racking or whatever it is for your business. You don't just walk right into another truck or van, you know, when that case happens. So that's kind of what we had going on.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, if anybody out there in Radioland has a question or a comment for us, you can text us on our text line. That's the best way to get a hold of us. Our phone number is 417-447-5743. Once again, that is 417-447-5743. Or you can reach out to us on our social media at 1041KSGF. Dustin, I hope you have a good rest of your weekend.
Yep. Be safe out there.
Bye.